Okay, so we are still, I think, we're on the bottom of page 1269 in the story. We're still in chapter one, which means we'll, but it doesn't matter. It's so much, it's incredible. So I just want to find my place here. And beautiful. So last week, we discussed quite in detail how Naomi, good morning. How Naomi and Ruth are leaving Moav, and how Naomi is trying to talk Ruth out of joining her, convincing her with such detail, and yet Ruth is determined, adamant, she's going. Until, as we said last week, she gets almost like quite emotionally almost upset, and she says, and as her words are, ki hamoves, only death, yafrid beini ubeinech, only death will separate between me and you. And then, as we said, I think we might have read this pasuk, but I don't know how much depth we went to in pasuk yudches, verse 18, so it's towards the bottom, the second to last verse on this page, and it says like this, vatera, so she saw, ki mis ametzes, that she was determined, and we'll discuss that word at length. Mis ametzes. This place, Lisa, come, sit here. Don't have to. Oh, there, okay. Oh, God, I feel bad. I moved away the tape, but okay, but it's fine. Okay, ki mis ametzes, that she is determined, laleches, to go ita with her, vatechtal ledaber eileha, and she stopped, literally, ledaber is to speak with her. Sometimes they translate to argue. So it's page 1269 towards the bottom. 1269. So she saw, Ruth, Naomi sees how determined Ruth is. There's no convincing her otherwise. No matter what, she is coming. Now the word ki mis ametzes is a very interesting language. Because you know we have, the word is used with Moshe and Yehoshua. He says chazak. The ematz, we know that it's a term that's used. Strengthen yourself and strengthen yourself. Mis ametzes is not just an ordinary determination. It's this absolute, total conviction that nothing is going to stop her. And that's the feeling that Ruth had, and that's what Naomi realized. This is it. She's coming. And therefore, interesting, it seems to be the language that's used, she stopped speaking to her, almost sounds like, you know, sometimes when people have a little bit of a rift, a bit of an argument, and then one says, okay, well, I'll just accept it silently. That's not what it is. What it means over here is she stopped speaking to her about this topic. She stopped discussing whether she should return to Moav or stay with her and come to Israel. That was off limits, that topic. That's what it means she stopped speaking. And also the language you see, lidaber, daber is a harsh type of speaking. And Naomi stopped speaking to her with that type of persuasive kind of conversation. Okay. Very, very, very interesting. It is a very beautiful thing that is discussed when it says ki misametzes. When they were going now, as we mentioned, they left at night, it seems. And we'll see from the next pasuk also. It's quite a dangerous and difficult journey that they're taking. Besides being emotionally difficult, it's even physically difficult. They want to cover as much ground as they can, as quickly as they can. Naomi is so eager to get back to Israel. She's so eager to leave Moav that she is literally rushing. She is going very, very quickly. And it seems that Ruth, being the princess that she was, wasn't used to this type of journey, if you want to say. No coach, no, you know, there's nothing taking her. They're just simply barefoot walking on the ground. So she had to miss a metzah, she had to strengthen herself to keep up with Naomi, even though Naomi is the older of the two. And that's also one of the things that it's implying. Another beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing, it says like this, that there's a very interesting story in the Gemara, that's its own thing, but there was a very famous one of the great sages, one of our greatest sages, known as Reish Lakish. We hear a name, we say Reish Lakish, we say, okay. But Reish Lakish means, Reish is head, like head, and Lakish, robber. He was actually the robber chief, the chief of robbers. And this name he retained throughout. What's the story? Whatever, for some reason he went on the wrong path and he became a chief of robbers. One day, and how did he become a great sage? That's a, so the story goes, one day he was, they were near like this river, and there was a group of sages that were traveling, and I think they tried to rob them, or maybe they did rob them, this bad, you know, his whole gang. And amongst those sages was one of the, who became later one of the chief rabbis, was Rabbi Yochanan. Now Rabbi Yochanan, and the Gemara there goes in detail, like I say, it's its own beautiful thing to look inside and see, was apparently one of the most handsome men that ever lived. And the Gemara goes and discusses actually how handsome he was. Well, when Reish Lakish saw Rabbi Yochanan, so he says to him, "Do you have a sister? You're so handsome, right?" So Rabbi Yochanan says, "Even if I had a sister, I wouldn't give her to you. Unless," he says, "unless you start to learn Torah," which means, obviously, you change your ways. Well, it says, Reish Lakish resolved at that moment that he's leaving his whole past behind, and he's going to go with Rabbi Yochanan, and he's going to change his ways. He got this inspiration, he's changing his ways. What does it have to do with this? So something very incredible happens there in this story. It says that when he was like a real, very, very, very strong, rough person, right? That's what he was used to, that type of work. Initially, when he had initially met the sages, he had jumped literally from one side of the river to the other side of the river, like just leapt over. Now, once he resolved to go with Rabbi Yochanan, it describes that he couldn't even keep up. He just couldn't do anything. Like, all of a sudden, he felt he had no more strength. And he turned to Rabbi Yochanan and he said, "What'd you do to me? What happened to me?" And Rabbi Yochanan said that when a person is involved, and he wasn't yet involved, determines that he will be involved in the study of Torah, he loses his physical strength. What does that mean? It's a very fascinating thing, that you are directing your energy to a whole different direction. And what was it? Very interesting, that immediately it impacted him physically, which means he only made the decision to start learning Torah, and he was already weakened. So too here, Ruth has just made the decision. She is not Jewish yet. She hasn't gotten into the land of Israel yet. All she has made the decision to change her life, and now she struggles to keep up with Naomi. It's a positive thing. It's showing, and yet, and the beautiful thing, that doesn't deter her. She's still determined. She's still going. Her strength now lies more in her conviction than in anything else. And that's what matters. So that's another very beautiful thing, just in these words that's hinting. I just wanted to make sure. Okay. All right. So now, let me just see if there's anything else here. I think that's all for this pasuk. Okay. So we can see this is what's coming through. Now let's come into the next pasuk. It's also very interesting because in the next pasuk, just from the language, we can see, sort of depict the whole scene just from the wording of the pasuk. So pasuk Yutes 19, I think we might be turning the page. Yeah, we're going to be turning the page in the middle. Vatelachno shtehem, and the two of them walked, two of them went, ad Vayana Beis Lechem, until they arrived in Beis Lechem. Vayehi ki Vayana Beis Lechem, and it was when they arrived in Beis Lechem, Vatehoim Kol Ha'ir, and the entire city was in an uproar, Alehen, about them. Vatoimarna, what were they saying? Hazois Naomi, is this Naomi? Just want to read one more pasuk and we'll come back here. And what did Naomi respond? Vatoimar Alehen, and she said to them, Al tikrena li Naomi, don't call me Naomi, karena li Mara, call me Mara, bitter. Naomi means pleasant. My name is not pleasant anymore, now you have to call me bitter. And why? Ki heimar shakai li ma'id, because Hashem, as you say, has dealt very bitterly with me. We have to understand what this means, but obviously she's a different person now than when she left. But before we go into that, let's just see the pasuk before. I want to see what happens here. Vatelachna shtehem, right? And they both went. Again, talking diktuk, I know grammar, but the word shtehem, do you see that mem at the end? Do you know what that makes it? It's not feminine. If you want to say feminine, you'd say shtehem. Shnehen, right? Yeah, it is plural, but it still needs the nun at the end and not the mem at the end. So especially if you're going with what you did before, right? V'telachna, it should say, you see, shtehen. But it doesn't, it says shtehen. Why? What happened? But then, something interesting. I just want to show you something. Until they came to Beis Lechem. And then when they came to Beis Lechem, then it says, kivayana. They arrived, and that's women are coming, right? You can see. So there's the feminine, back to the feminine again. Something strange is happening. So the Mefarshim say on a very simple level, we learn something very interesting that happened. This is just part of the story. They're going, they're on their way traveling, whatever it was, 70 kilometers, however far it is, in the no man's land, on their own. They didn't join a caravan, they didn't have money to pay to join a caravan. Two women traveling alone. Even today, even in Australia, but definitely in countries like those, absolutely beyond dangerous. You can't do it. In those days, and even now in these countries, people have chaperones. Women do not travel on their own, and not only because they're being oppressed that they need the chaperone, but if they don't have the chaperone, then they're really in trouble. So what do? They have a problem. So they decide they have a plan. So Naomi and Ruth put on some kind of male rag clothing. Instead of woman rag clothing, they dress up as men. So when they're traveling, nobody will assault them. That's their plan. They're women, but they are traveling as men. If you are a poor man, nobody's going to be, you have nothing. So what should somebody bother you? So you can see. But as soon as they get to Beis Lechem, they take off their male clothing, and now they put back on their woman clothing. One of the reasons is because we know in Torah we're not permitted to wear clothing. A woman is not permitted to wear the clothing of a man per se, but for saving of a life, you are. But once you're not allowed anymore, you have to remove it. Okay, that's on a simple level. On a little bit of a deeper level, it says, the way they walked with the energy, if you want to say, the quickness of a man. So they were going very, very quickly. They were so eager, and especially Naomi, to come back to Beis Lechem, that the energy that they used was that of a type of a male energy. That's how quickly they ran. So that's another very interesting thing. Okay, and then also we see something else very nice, V'telachna shteihem, it's putting them both together. They are both going together, which means they're going united as one. And if we think about it, that's massive. Ruth is leaving her family behind. Naomi is rejoining her family. How could they? You can't have anything more different than that. More emotionally different. It's like when you go to the departures and the arrivals, and different people are happy because it's depending on what's happening there, right? So here, she's leaving, she's coming, and yet they're going as one. The other thing, it says a beautiful thing. As soon as Ruth decided she was becoming Jewish, she actually becomes equal to Naomi. She is equalized in the eyes of Hashem and the eyes of the prophet who wrote the Navi. So there's no discrepancy. She's not less than Naomi, even before, just as soon as she made that decision. So equal, walking together as equals. And that's massive, because Naomi isn't just an ordinary Jewish woman. She's a very unique and special Jewish woman. So here we have all shown in the little bit of the two, so to speak, words, but they come to Beis Lechem. And now we have something interesting. What's going on when they come to Beis Lechem? It sounds so crazy. So just because two women are walking into the city, how could the whole city become an uproar? Well, we might say, yeah, that's how it works. We know that sometimes when people like to, you know, what the word in South Africa, they say lush, you know, when they want to have something good gossip to talk about, what could be more fun? These two women, Nebach, look at Naomi, what happened to her? But it's not so simple. How could everybody, it wasn't the time of the, you know, WhatsApp, how did everybody all of a sudden know that they're there? So the Medrash tells us there's three explanations, actually, for what could have happened, and Rashi brings only one of them. The three explanations is either it was, as we mentioned, the time of the harvest of the barley, so everybody's out in the field bringing the special barley offering. So because the whole city is out in the field, when they approach, everybody sees them as one. That's one way, one answer. Another answer is that the leader of the generation, Bayaz, otherwise known as Iftson, as one of the judges, so there's two ways that he's referred to, was marrying off Oh, not Mary. No, 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 no. Yes. That was interesting. I'm thinking how that could work together. No, so I'll say two explanations because I'm just trying to figure out that one. But the main one is this one, was that Iftson, or Boaz, his wife had passed away. And what was happening was this was the burial. They were burying his wife. Everybody in the town. This was the leader of the generation. So it wouldn't even just have been the town. It would have been many, many extra people are there at this burial. When they approach and they are seen by the woman of the town, it's just this massive shock. It's an uproar. Something really strange. They can't believe their eyes. Very interesting, though, the Mefarshim tell us, Rashi brings the one answer. Rashi brings the answer that it was the funeral, and that's why they were out. And the Mefarshim explain, why does Rashi bring that answer specifically? Because that answer is really, philosophically, a very beautiful insight for us. He says, and the Sifsei Chachamim, who's one of the commentaries on Rashi, Rashi's a commentary and this commentary is on Rashi, explains what is the significance of what Rashi is saying, why is he bringing that view, what's the difference if it's the funeral, so what happens to be. So he said, what does that show? It shows that when Ruth and Naomi resolve to leave Moav, Boaz's wife is still alive, right? Now, then she passes away as they are traveling towards Israel. Who's coming to Israel? Who's arriving? Ruth. What is going to happen with Ruth? She is going to marry Boaz. When Boaz's wife passes away, this is a tragedy. It's a terrible. She was a very special woman. She was married to the leader, and she herself was very, very respected. She was an inspiration to the people. So it says a beautiful thing, that there's a concept that we call Hashem Makdim Refua Lamaka. He precedes the healing or the cure before he brings the devastation, before the illness. Not after the illness, then we figure out what we're going to do. So here Ruth already is coming, and only then can Boaz's first wife pass away. So it's actually a beautiful thing, and Sifsei Chaim uses very strong language. It says it should implant within us a very strong bitachon, a very strong trust, that even though externally, and even it's more than just externally, things are not going so well, and it could even be a tragedy that we are experiencing, we should realize that there is a God above, and he's orchestrating things, and we don't know what's around the corner. So it's a very powerful concept that Dafka brought, Dafka, that's why they came. But you can see here, this is one of the beginning of the Hashkacha Pratis, the divine providence, which really marks the entire story of Ruth in a very specific and highlighted way. Okay, so then we come to, let's see, I just want to see if there was anything else here. I think that was all for this one. Okay. So sorry, just make sure. Okay. All right. Now we come to the next pasuk. So let's see what happens in the next pasuk. Oh, even in this pasuk. Hazais Naomi, right? Is this Naomi? So the first one say very true. If you just think about what happens over there, what are they saying? Hazais Naomi, is this Naomi? What does that mean, Hazais Naomi? It is Naomi. Well, interesting thing is that when they first saw from a distance, why did they even look at them? Because this is something, a very strange sight. Because to see two women, now they had put back their woman clothing, two women traveling alone from the direction that they were coming was a very big shock to the people. How could this be? How are they safe? How are they coming? How come they're traveling that way? So already their interest is piqued. And then as they come closer, they start to scrutinize, who is this? And then they notice, oh my gosh, is this Naomi? What happened to her? And the Medrash describes how before, it's very interesting how it described, before she used to travel in this fancy coach and with him, and interesting notes, beautiful shoes, it says. She had beautiful shoes. Always the hallmark of a woman is the shoes, even in those days. Now, never mind the coach, she has no shoes. This is Naomi. What happened to Naomi? And everybody is shocked. So there's different responses, and we could imagine amongst different people. Some people would have felt, yeah, she deserved it. She deserted us when we needed her most. And some people were devastated. how did this happen to our princess? Because she was a very beloved woman. She was a woman who people liked. So this was a terrible shock for them. What happened, and how could God do this to such a wonderful person? And that's why Naomi responds the way she does. She can feel that some of the people are complaining, so to speak, and having questions to God. Is God doing justice? Is this the way God treats a righteous woman? Turns her life into such a... So that's why. What does she say? Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. You know why? Because I actually deserve everything that Hashem has set out for me. Why? Because when I left you, some of you are thinking they had no choice. What could they do? They were, you know, they needed to leave because otherwise they wouldn't have had enough money to give everybody. Naomi says, no, 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 that's all garbage. We should never have left. We were doing the wrong thing. We would have had money. We would have depleted our resources, yes, but we still could have helped everybody. We shirked our responsibility. And I deserve every single thing that Hashem has given me. And I am bitter, not because I am bitter to God. I am bitter because I almost cannot live with my decisions. My decisions were the wrong ones, and now I am paying for it justly. So it's a very powerful conversation, if you want to say, that Naomi's having. We see the greatness of Naomi here also. And this is part of the beginning of the next part, because we're going to leave Naomi soon. Here she plays a big role, and then she plays a very small role, but we can see the setting of why she's the one that raises Ruth's son, helps Ruth raise the son, and almost becomes like a mother, maybe the first mother, the second mother, whatever it was. Why? Because she is such an incredible woman with such a strong betochen, despite and because of all of her life experiences. So, sure.
How many days?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question, because there's different commentaries. According to some commentaries, it would have taken about 3 or 4 days. Some commentaries say there was a miracle that happened, and Hashem shortened the way for them. That's why it said like they quickly ran, because Hashem wanted them to arrive exactly at the moment when all of the townspeople were gathered.
Okay, so my next question is, what were they carrying with them?
Nothing. They had
so
nothing.
Where did they get the clothing?
Yes, so it seems that, okay, so could be they found rags on the side, you know, because these weren't good clothing. They must have picked something up from, because they really had nothing.
So they carried nothing?
Nothing, no. That's why they left those rags. There wasn't anything worth, no, they had nothing, literally nothing. And that's the shock that people are seeing. Okay, we'll see, because we'll see how much nothing they have, that what they have to stoop, so to speak, to do. Okay. And one other very interesting thing it says, that... very interesting. Mara is written with an aleph. In Hebrew, Mara is not spelled with an aleph. Did you notice? It's spelled with a hey. So the Mefarshim and the commentaries say that Mara with an aleph is, it's very few times in Tanakh that we have such a thing, but if that happens, it's for emphasis. It's showing us that she's not just bitter, she's very, very, very bitter. Okay? She's like extremely bitter. And again, it's not a bitterness of anger to Hashem, it's a bitterness directed at herself. And that's very, very powerful. One of the other interesting things it says that she left, look how she contrasts. I left full, right? Ani, oh, we didn't read that pasuk. I'm going to show you the next pasuk. Oh, sorry, there's one more thing in this pasuk. Ki heimar shaddai lima'ai. The word shindalad yud is one of the names of Hashem, right? And it says that, why did she use that name of Hashem here specifically, that Hashem, so to speak, has embittered me? Because that name of Hashem is used, Shaddai, we would say, that it is enough. This name of Hashem, it says that when Hashem created the world, he's an infinite, all-powerful creator, and he's creating a finite world. So it comes to a certain point that Hashem says, enough, I'm going to stop creating now. Die, enough. We have this name used by Yaakov Avinu, that when Yaakov was in a terrible state, he said to Hashem, just like you said, die, enough, I'm not creating anymore, I beg you, say die to my tzaras. Enough of my pain. I can't take any more pain. And here Naomi is using the same thing. She's saying to Hashem, yes, I've suffered. Boy, did I suffer. I lost everything. But now I am about to come back and rejoin my people. maybe we can say enough of my tzaris, and from now things can turn around a little bit. And they do. They turn around tremendously. That's what happens in the next few months. But that's why she uses that language, Shaddai. And then it's a very interesting thing. As says, the language, Misha Amar La'aylam Dai, Yoimar Litzarossi Dai. The one who said that world enough, like enough of the creation, will say, for your pain and your suffering, it's enough. Okay, that was when Yaakov was afraid of losing another son after the brothers came back from Yosef, you know, and they didn't come back with everybody, and he's like, Hashem, how much could I take? One son I've lost, my wife, my beloved wife, I've lost, I can't have any more losses. That's what Yaakov said, and that's what she's saying here. And in the next pasuk, it says, Ani mileya halachti, right? I left full, like mole, full. The reikam heshivani Hashem, but Hashem has returned me empty. Lama sikrenali Naomi, right? Why should you call me Naomi? Vashem anabi vishakai heirali. Hashem has testified against me, and Hashem has brought misfortune upon me. What is she saying? Ani meleya halachti. Very interesting. I left full. Well, simply she did. A husband, children, wealth. What could be more? But also, it says a very interesting thing. Ani meleya halachti. I was full, and they say full with a hay. What is a hay? A hay is five. What does five mean? She says, when we left, we were five souls. Now I come back as one. But how is she five? She and her husband, Naomi and Elimelech, Machlin and Kilian, is four. What is five? So the Mefarshim say something very sad, that this actually is an allusion to something that we wouldn't know in another way. There was another soul there. She was actually pregnant when she left Israel for the first time, and she miscarried. She lost her baby. And a very beautiful thing, actually, it seems that we, because this is very, this is a subject that's not really touched upon much in Torah, which is interesting. I don't know why that would be interesting to learn why, but it's a tremendous loss for any woman who has ever had a miscarriage. And it's a loss which is not spoken about. Even in the world, you know, it's considered, you know, the loss that people say you shouldn't feel such a loss. But you see here, even after the 10 years, to her, it was still a terrible loss. And that's what she's expressing. So, you know, it's not just the people that you see that I've lost, even the one you didn't even know about, that was also taken away from me. So that's one of the explanations that's given about this, also Malaya, that I was and I miscarried. But also just simply, I lost every single thing, including, of course, my children, my husband, and my wealth, my prestige, my honor, my reputation, everything. Everything is totally gone. And now I am returning. So let's see what she says in the next pasuk. Okay, in the next pasuk she says, Vatoshav, okay, so now we come to the last pasuk. Vatoshav Naomi Virus Hamayavia Kalosa Ima. So Naomi returns with and Rus, the Moabite daughter-in-law, with her. Hashava Misde Mayav, who has returned from the fields of Mayav. Veheima Ba'u Beis Lechem, and they have come to Beis Lechem, Betchilas Tzir Sa'irim, at the beginning of the barley harvest. This is an interesting pasuk. I mean, when we write an essay or in English, you know, you do have a concluding verse that would incorporate a lot of the information. But Tanakh doesn't do that. Tanakh is very exact with its wording. Most of this pasuk is repetitive. We know she came from the Mayav. We know she came to Beis Lechem. It already says. We know that Rus is her daughter-in-law. We know Rus is the mother. We know everything in this pasuk. What is this pasuk showing us? So it is a conclusion to the first chapter, but just this is also its own shir. But chapters are really not divinely inspired. We know that chapters were done by the monk. Yeah, it wasn't even a Jewish thing at all, the division according to chapters. So it's not significant that's the end of the chapter, really. It's significant that it will lead us to the next part of the story. But what's happening in this pasuk? What does it mean that Naomi and Ruth return, and they return from the fields of Mayav? So just very, very simply, we can see something amazing right away. Who's returning here? Who's really returning? Who could we use the word return for in this? Only Naomi. Ruth has never been there before. She's not returning. She's coming for the first time. And yet the Pasuk stresses that Rus HaMoaviah is returning to Israel. How? What does that mean? So again, I know we've discussed this many times. I won't do it at length, but again, this is also a very powerful and beautiful idea. We say that Rus is returning, because the truth is, even though she wasn't physically ever in Israel, spiritually she was connected even before she met Naomi. Because as we know the concept that a convert who converts has a special neshama from the beginning, and that's why it's called Ger Sheniskayer. A convert who converts, not a stranger or a non-Jew. It's a convert, has a special neshama, and that's what's burning and causing them to come closer. So here we can see she is returning, because that's really where she came from. She didn't know about it yet, but that's the fact, and that's what she felt. And that also shows us the determination of Ruth was so strong, because she was literally being pulled back. It wasn't logical, it wasn't rational, it didn't make any sense, but it was purely intentioned. And we can see also that when she comes back to Beis Lechem, even though the greeting that they just had wasn't such a nice greeting. I mean, who says to you, look what you look like? I mean, they haven't seen Naomi for 10 years. And they don't even say anything to Ruth, right? She's not even noticed. And yet, right away, what do we say? There's no feeling of regret. To her, it's a feeling of returning to where she belongs, to her home, which is such a powerful concept. And that's why we can see Ruth becomes the great-great-grandmother of Mashiach, because she has that spiritual, if you want to say, that incredible spiritual heritage, but it's also that she feels it. She feels connected to it. So to her, it's a returning. When do they return? But also the big thing is Mistei Mayav. We knew she came from Mayav again, because she's leaving everything behind. She's coming to a country that she doesn't even know she's going to get married again. And she wants to. She wants to have a child. But maybe nobody will marry her, because Naomi had already told her, Moabites, they're not looked upon very highly at all. That's why it's stressing. It doesn't matter. She still feels like she's returning, even though superficially, and it's not just superficially, it's in the, you know, so to speak, in the way, you know, in the relationship that she's going to have with the people, she might never be accepted. So it's an amazing type of a thing to feel that you belong somewhere when the people do not feel that way. But she feels that way, and that's all that matters. Very, very powerful. That's why it's very much stressing. And why does it tell us when it was? B'tchilas k'tzir sa'irim, because we know this plays a very big role in the whole story. This was the barley harvest, and that's why, that's how she gets to meet Boaz, as we will see that unfolds the rest of the story. And on a deeper level, what does barley represent? We know this is the time barley is cut originally, Pesach time, and then it's harvested Pesach time. The idea being barley is the food of animals, we call it, where we have to improve ourselves. We have to transform all of our animalistic tendencies, work on them, transform them, elevate, refine them. And that's what's hinted here. That's what Ruth does. Ruth says, I am leaving everything behind. I am starting a whole new life, a life of transformation. And however long it'll take me, I'm ready to embark upon it, just like the Jewish people when they left Egypt. That's exactly her journey, leaving Moav. That's what she does. Okay, so now, let's see what happens now. Now we come, this is very beautiful, this part of the story, Vila Naomi, because now we come to a little bit of a happier part, almost, not yet, but almost. Meida, so it's a very funny term. Meida is a relative. Naomi had a relative. And who was the relative? It says Leisha, to her husband. And who was he? Ish Gibor Chayil, a man, in English, how do they translate here? A man, Gibor Chayil means either a strong man, a man of valor. He was a very respected man. And who was he? He was from the family, Mimishpachas Elimelech, Ushmoy, Boaz. His name was Boaz. So here we are finally being introduced formally to Boaz. What is it? Who was he, Boaz? How was he related? It's a very, very interesting thing, exactly the connection that they had. What's very fascinating is from this story, from this pasuk, it sounds like he's only related to who? To Elimelech. But he's actually related to Naomi as well. He's there because Naomi and Elimelech, interestingly enough, Elimelech was the uncle of Naomi. That's what it says. In those days, that was okay. And she married her uncle. So, and Elimelech had another brother. And the brother's name was, how come I forgot? I'm so sorry, because I do know the brother's name, and I forgot now. And that brother had a son, Boaz. So Boaz is, and another brother had a daughter, Naomi. So Boaz and Naomi are actually first cousins, and Elimelech was his uncle. And yet the pasuk doesn't highlight the fact that he's related to Naomi. It more highlights the fact that he's related to Elimelech, which is a little bit strange because Elimelech is out of the picture now. And if anything, what should we highlight that he's related to Naomi? But the reason is because the role that he plays in the story is as a relative of Elimelech. Because for the Yibum, which I'm sorry, we're not going to get to, the Levirate marriage that's going to happen, that is only through the father's family, because it has to do with the tribes. The tribe is passed down from father to son. Jewishness from mother, father is the tribe. And this is a matter of tribal, because what are we getting to? We want David HaMelech, right? We want a king from the tribe of Yehuda. So what matters here is the fact that he's related to Elimelech. And that's why that's what's being highlighted. But let's see, interesting thing. That word Meida is a fascinating word because it says that he's a relative, right? But it's a very, very interesting way that it puts the word. Okay, just want to see one thing. I'm going to find it here. But I just want to show you something else before we go into this word Meida, just a very interesting thing. If we would imagine, just out of, she comes to Israel, penniless, knows nobody, I mean, whatever, has nothing after 10 years. And here, right away, what does it describe? She has such a phenomenal relative.
Yichus.
Yes, such yichus. But this relative is a good man, a righteous man, a kind man, and a leader. Now, what would we imagine Naomi would do straight away? Knock on his door. I'm back. Can I come in? Can you please welcome me? I need some food. I need somewhere to stay. Nothing. She doesn't reach out to him at all. So you might think, why doesn't she reach out to him? Maybe she had lost contact, right? There are sometimes people don't know their first cousins. So it's a first cousin. Doesn't mean she knows every first cousin. No. The word Meida shows us something interesting because you see that little yud over there? The yud shows us, the yud of the Medrash tells us is very specific there. What's the yud? You see in the pasuk, it's a funny little thing because yud is 10. She was gone for 10 years, and it says that the entire 10 years, Boaz was writing her letters every, I don't know how often, but very often. Naomi, come back to Israel. Naomi, come back to Israel. Naomi, come back to Israel. There was no loss of contact. They were very close. And Boaz felt that Naomi, he actually, in the letter, somebody, he said to her, you know, you own land here. If you own land, you're not penniless. It'll take time, but I'll help you. And you can again become a person who can give to others, and that's where you belong. And initially the letters were before she had lost all of her money, so it was like you have a responsibility. But even after she lost her money, he was still encouraging her to come back. So if that's the case, why doesn't she go straight to Boaz? So a very fascinating thing the Medrash says, if we think about the story of what's happening here. If Naomi would have gone to Boaz and knocked on his door, of course he would have welcomed her in. What's the question? But there's a little bit of a problem. Naomi's not on her own. She's with Ruth. Who's Ruth? A single,
nobody.
Unmarried Moabite, exactly, that cannot maybe marry a Jew. She knows if she goes to Boaz, first of all, Boaz lost his wife, so he can't take in Ruth. That's not going to happen. It wouldn't look right. Besides that, he won't want to. So she means that she would have to leave Ruth to fend for herself. Naomi says, how can I do that after the sacrifice that she has done for me? So we see a very beautiful relationship here. They both give to each other. They both feel for each other and are willing to make whatever sacrifices are necessary for each other. And that's what underneath the, you know, in the psukim, subtly, we see it's hinted to all of these different ideas. Very, very fascinating. Just want to see, before we go further, just want to see if there's, I don't want to miss anything important. Okay, I actually missed already something else important, but it doesn't matter. We'll see. Okay. Okay. So, The big question, as we said, is why she didn't reach out for help. So on the one hand, she's also very embarrassed. Naomi, and after all those letters, she hadn't come back. So she's not going knocking on his door now. Now you come? Now when you need me, all of a sudden you know me because you're desperate? It's incredibly embarrassing for Naomi. So that's quite understandable. Also, she was afraid not only that she couldn't be separated, but let's say she would go to Boaz and he can just give her some provision, something. But she was afraid that Boaz would judge her wrongly. He doesn't know Ruth. He doesn't know how special she is. So he'll say to her, you came back, but what did you bring with you? What are you thinking? Why did you bring her here? She didn't want that. She wasn't ready to be confronted about Ruth. Part of that is all, as we see the underlying, divine providence. Hashem didn't want Boaz to meet Ruth this way. We'll see. There's a special way that he has to meet her, and it's not this way, not coming to beg with Naomi for help. Also, very interesting thing. The question is goes the other way. Very nice. Naomi is embarrassed, so she's not coming to Boaz. But if you hear that your first cousin has come to town, she's Penny, everybody's describing how she looks. Everybody knows that she's poverty-stricken and she's a person who has suffered so much. And apparently, in the Medrash even describes that her face was so thin and they couldn't believe it because she had gone with such a full face. She always had the best food and she even had a green complexion. A person who we just said is righteous and kind, why didn't he just send her things? Where was he? What's going on? So on one thing, let's not forget, his wife just died. He was sitting Shiva. And the other thing, he couldn't because it wouldn't look right. What does it mean it wouldn't look right? Because she had Ruth with her, people, and his wife had just died, and Ruth was beyond beautiful. What would people start to say? Ah, now he's interested in Naomi because she brought a beautiful girl with her. So he had to be extra careful. But the first reason is very understandable. He lost his wife. Obviously, his mind is not there at all. He's might not even be 100% aware, and he definitely can't do anything about Naomi's plight. Okay, so this we have, she's penniless. That's what we see. And now what happens? So what does Rus do? Rus has a very interesting idea. Sorry, I just want to see if I have the beginning of the pasuk. Okay. Okay. So Rus, the Moabite, says to Naomi, Elchana. It's a very beautiful language. Like, please, I want to go, please, hasodet, to the field. Va'alakta bashibaylim, and I will do what we know as leket. We'll see in a minute what that is. I will gather the sheaves. Achar asher emtza chen be'enav, after I find favor in somebody's eyes. Va'taymerla, and she says to her, go, my daughter. So what does Ruth say? They're starving. Okay, this is amazing. Mamash, you see, they had no food. Even if they had fields, but the fields were left for 10 years, there's nothing growing on those fields. They have nothing to eat. It's hard for us to understand because, I mean, this is, why didn't anybody send, you know, if somebody new comes in, somebody would send you a cake, a soup, or something. It doesn't make sense. But it's all hashgacha pratis here, you can see. And people were also, again, it's not just Boaz who's devastated, the people were devastated. This had been a very big tragedy that they had just experienced. So now Ruth, who had learned from Naomi all about the beautiful ways of the Jewish people, had already learned these phenomenal halachas, these laws of this, if you want to say, a little bit of socialism in our system, where when a farmer farms, we know there's a few mitzvahs, there's peah, where they leave the corner of the field for the poor. Leket is a very interesting mitzvah. When they're cutting the sheaves, if the person takes, I don't know what you call the tool that they use to cut it, and two of the stalks of wheat are left, then they have to leave them. They can't cut those two. More than two, then it's already a bunch you can. And then there's shikra if it drops, right, if two drop. So she had already learned these halachas. So she said, I know that your system is beautiful. And there's a way for me to find us food. We don't have to be starving. Let me go to the field and I will gather the leket. If you think about this is quite incredible. Who went to get the leket? The poorest of the poor people, the most demeaning thing in the world. She's a princess. She hasn't had time yet. I mean, even though they had lost their money, but still, to she's coming to a foreign country, a new place, and she's willing to stoop to go and gather. Why didn't Naomi go and gather? So Ruth has an interesting conversation with Naomi. She says, you know, between me and you, it is much better if I go. Why? Nobody knows me anyway. For you, it's much more embarrassing. For me, it's much less embarrassing. I'm a stranger anyway. I'm not even so accepted anyway. I'm just the Moabite girl. So what's the difference? How I'm acting? I will go. I will do the mitzvah of leket. I will be able to profit from that mitzvah. In other words, we'll have something to eat. An interesting thing is that Naomi at first was quite hesitant, but there was no choice. They had nothing to eat. And that's why she says, go, my daughter. And she like blesses her that she should go in peace and that she should be able to be successful and do what she needed to do without too much embarrassment, as we say. Okay, very interesting how she highlights that what will she do? She will do leket. Not peya. Peya is actually an easier one. Because peya, if you think about it, that's in the corner of the field. So it's a certain spot, and you know that that spot's designated. But because it's easier, it's more full of people. It would be much, A, it would be more embarrassing in a way because it's more full of people, but B, you would have to be very assertive there. There you would have to be a little bit aggressive because they're not the only poor people and all the poor people are coming to the corner. But with Leket, you're following and you don't know that he's going to forget. So there's a lot less people and it's a lot less aggressive. And that's what Ruth says. This is Ruth's way. This is better for me. She also mentions something interesting that she's going to walk behind and we'll see soon. She walks quite a few steps behind. It's interesting because it's not such a good idea because if you want to make sure you're going to get it, the closer you are, the better. But for a few reasons, she doesn't come too close. A, who's doing the cutting? They're men. It's not modest. That's the first thing. And that's a very big thing with Ruth, that we see her behavior. And B, she also wants to make sure that it's leket, that it's not just, maybe there's three, maybe they're going to come back, maybe they intend. So she's so careful. It's quite incredible. Every detail, she's so exact in the way she behaves, even in the most desperate situation. And that's what's amazing about it. Because it's not easy, but it's simple for us to be careful and, you know, thought out when things are going well. But when things are not going well, and when we're under pressure, we don't behave that way. And yet, Ruth has that presence, that incredible strong presence of mind. And that's a very powerful thing. Again, showing us why she merited to marry Boaz and have the one who will be the Mashiach. It's all from this whole concept. Okay. And then, also interesting thing she says, where I find favor in their eyes. It's interesting, she has that sensitivity. She says, if I go to a field and I feel I'm unwanted, I'll leave right away. I'll only go where I feel that I'm not being a burden or I'm not unwanted. No negative feelings. She doesn't want to create negative feelings around her, and she doesn't want to be the recipient of any negative feelings, which is actually a very powerful thing, because really, she's allowed to take. They're the ones who are doing the wrong thing if they're looking at her the wrong way, so to speak. Okay. Just want to see if there was anything else. Okay, so let's see now what happens. And now we come again to the real, real Hashgacha Pratis. Oh, good. I'm happy we have a bit more time. So he says like this. Vatelech, and she goes. Vatavoy, and she arrives. Vatilaket basode, and then she gleans in the field. Acharei ha. See, Hakaitzrim, after those who are doing the cutting, the reapers, Vayiker Mikra, this is very interesting terminology, and it happened to happen, Chelkas Hasode LeBayaz, that the portion of the field belonged to who? To Bayaz, Asher Mimishpachas Elimelech, who was from the family of Elimelech. First of all, the first two words are very strange. Vatelech means she went, Vatavai she came. Sounds like she returned. But then it says that she gleaned. So something's funny here. So it should have said she went, she gleaned, and then she returns, right? Why does it say it this way? So again, talking about the presence of mind that Ruth had is unbelievable. One of the things that Naomi was a little bit worried about, and she said to Ruth, how can you go by yourself? You don't even know where you're going. Shoot, you've never been here before, spiritually maybe, but not physically. You don't know the roads, you don't know the farms, you know nothing. How are you going to even return to me? So Ruth is very thought out. And what Ruth does is, as she's walking, she goes slowly And she makes markings. So she goes and she returns. She goes and she returns. She learns the way. Either she makes markings along the way, or she keeps coming back and forth to make sure she knows exactly where she's going. So she's a very thought-out person, and then she's gleaning. And then we can see a very beautiful thing, as we said, acharei hakotzim, so she leaves a big space between her and the ones who are doing the reaping. And then, also interesting, as we... I'm trying to see if there was anything else. Okay, then... Yes, and then a very interesting thing also, it says Vayikar Mikra. Now these are very interesting words, because the word Mikra literally sometimes can be translated as a coincidence. But in Torah there's no coincidence. That's like a bad word, should we say? A dirty word in Torah. There's no such thing as coincidence. Everything is divine providence, that's the whole point. And that's why the language here that's used, Vayikar Mikra. And fate made it happen. It was almost like, it was quite an amazing thing. She was thinking everything through as best as she could, right? To make sure she's safe, to make sure she knows her way home. But who was really guiding her footsteps? Hashem, totally. So it was almost like there's this automatic, if you want to say this, I don't know how you say it, but something pulling her, which she is unaware of. That's what's happening. That's why to her it seems to just happen, but it's Hashem making the just happen happen. And the point why it says it this way is because this is what our whole life is about. That's why it wants to tell us. Because a lot of times in life we say, yeah, that was real Hashgacha Pratis. You know, sometimes we say, I had to go there, I met this person, it was amazing. But generally, day-to-day life, we don't say that, right? Like, you know, we go, we come, we just think, you know, things just happening. What we're showing here is that when the times that we feel that our least divine providence can be the most divine providence. We have no idea. And every single moment is Hashem making something happen. And sometimes we'll never know in our lifetime, only after 120, when we'll be able to look back and everything will be reviewed, and then we'll see. But this is what happens here to Ruth. Everything is happening exactly. It's a very important thing, and she happens to be come to the field of Bayaz. Now comes the next massive Hashgacha Pratis, and this is unbelievable. V'hine Bayaz ba mi beis lechem. Behold, Bayaz is coming from Beis Lechem. So you think, what's the big deal? It's his fields. Now just we said, he's a Gibor Chayil. Bayaz was the leader of the generation, spiritually. Besides the fact, he owned many fields. He didn't frequent his fields. He delegated. He had people working for him. He wasn't a man who used to go into the field every day. Here he is, having just obviously gotten up from Shiva, or just about to get up, like as we say. So it's the first time he's going out. And where is he going? To a field, that the same field that Ruth, and he didn't have one, that Ruth happens to come that day, and he meets her. Such incredible Hashgacha Pratis, like highlighted big time. And where is he coming from? Beis Lechem. So obviously he's coming from Beis Lechem, because we already said he lives in Beis Lechem. So the commentaries tell us something very beautiful, that when it tells us that Bayaz is coming, he's coming from something momentous. Okay, so he had been sitting Shiva. When he gets up from Shiva, it seems the first thing he does is he goes to the Beis Din, because that was his main job. The money, the fields, that was very nice. But his job was the leader of the generation. And actually in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it describes that day in the Beis Din, they had a few very interesting things to discuss, happens to me, that came on the... how do you say it? That was on the... Yes, agenda, exactly, amongst them. Is a Moabite woman allowed, for some reason, allowed to marry into the Jewish people? For some reason, that was part of the discussion on that day. And another beautiful thing that was part of the discussion, and this is something that we take for granted, that we don't even know was a discussion, it seems that up until that time, people were not using Hashem's name the way we use Hashem's name. What do we mean? You know, we have to be careful by saying God's name, the holy name of God. Only when we daven, we say. But a whole day, somebody says to you, how are you? Baruch Hashem, right? That's the answer. Thank God. How's everything? And we say, Emir Tzah Hashem, Be'ezra Hashem. Where did that come from? Before the time of Bayaz, that's not how they spoke. They thought that even Shalom Aleichem, Shalom is the name of God. They didn't greet somebody Shalom. I mean, maybe they did on special occasions, but not every single day. Why? Because it was considered disrespectful. It was considered that you're taking something holy into the mundane. Bayaz went to the Sanhedrin that day, and he says he sees that for some people are a little bit forgetting about God, that God is becoming a little bit in the back of people's minds during their regular day-to-day life. I have a great idea. Let's start greeting people by saying, Baruch Hashem, Emirtzah Hashem, Shalom Aleichem. God should become part of our conversation constantly. And this was what Boaz was coming from. Why is that so significant? Because we see God being so instrumental and so part of every step that is about to happen. And that's what's unbelievable. And this is what Boaz really wanted to make people aware of, even though he himself wasn't aware that that's how it's going to play out in his own life the next moment. And interesting, it did. Oh, 100 brachot, exactly. See, it comes from, it's amazing, it's beautiful. And this is such a beautiful thing. So we take a lot of things for granted. But sometimes when you learn about it, then you appreciate, you know, and you value more. So what we have to realize is that when we do say Baruch Hashem, and we should actually think about what we're saying a little bit, and not just use it as another word, so to speak, but it means that literally Hashem is blessing us and blessing you and is part of our life. That's the idea. But let's see what happens now. He comes and he says to the Kaitzrim, Hashem imochem, and I want to finish before this, a beautiful lesson. He says, God be with you, you see? God be with you. He's teaching them the new halacha. And they respond, because he said that, Yivarechecha Hashem, God should bless you. Now, very interesting thing. He says to them, God is with you, and Hashem should bless you. What the commentaries say is, what he's teaching them is this halacha, but he's obviously asking them, how are you? That's what he's saying. How are you? And that's, okay, they're saying, God, yeah, everything's wonderful. Now, if you think about for a moment, Boaz is coming here to the field, and it is the time when they're actually beginning the harvest, right? They're cutting the... He's coming to the field. He doesn't frequent the field usually. You would imagine that one of the first things that Boaz, who is the businessman, ultimately he owns all of these fields, he sees the fields, he sees how lush, he should ask them, he should inquire, how much profit have we made? How's the crops going? Is it everything work out? You know, the details, as a farmer would know. He doesn't ask anything about that. We'll see, the conversation has nothing to do with that. And his first question is, how are you workers? How are you faring? It's an amazingly powerful, small thing, but that's the way that a Jew does business. It's not a matter of the profits. It's a matter if the workers are being treated properly and how they are feeling and are they okay and what's in their personal life. And that's what Boaz was more involved in than anything else. Okay, it's true, he was a wealthy man and he was very fortunate, so to speak, that Hashem did bless him. But we can see one of the reasons why it seems to be that he was a person who generated blessing. And then he says to Vayam, I know we're going very superficially and the time is up, but he says, Lemi Hanaira Hazais. Here we start to the next thing. Who is this girl? Who is she? And this is where he unfolds, and this is a very funny question. What is the 80-year-old Boaz asking about of all of them? He doesn't even notice her. What's going on? So that's a whole thing. How he notices, she behaves differently. Hashem is obviously putting those words into his mouth. Hashem makes him notice her. Her behavior stands out so much that it's impossible not to notice her. And that's what the Medrash tells us, actually. It's quite incredible. Ruth was so different to everybody around her that you couldn't help but notice her. And in the next pasuk, it tells us that the workers say, oh, she's the Moabite. But the point is, she's the Moabite, but her actions are so not like a Moabite. Because all she cares about is, first of all, her mother-in-law. That's the first thing, she's not thinking about herself. That's why she's willing to demean herself. She's very, 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 very modest, very careful with the halacha not to take something that doesn't belong to her. She doesn't try to make it easy for herself. She's not aggressive. She gets along with the people around her. She doesn't even mix with the people around her. That's what it seems. She's not talking to any of the men that are there. She wants a shidduch, it would be a nice thing. Maybe somebody will, nothing, not, and she stays away, she keeps to herself. So she's, as we say, impossible not to notice Ruth. She's so different. And of course, as the Zayar says, even more, spiritually there was a glow around her, and it was Boaz, being the spiritual person that he was able to see that special glow. And then it unfolds the rest of the story, but we're going to have to leave it here.